on KGO 810.
Good afternoon, I'm Pat Thurston. Carell's coming up at 7, by the way. He'll join us at the end of the next hour to tell us what's coming up on his program. Okay, in this hour, we're going to talk about the boss. We're going to talk about Bruce. You know, the first concert of his I ever saw has been indelibly etched in my mind. I was in Indianapolis. I was introduced to Springsteen from the River album. I didn't know Bruce Springsteen prior to that. And when I listened to the River, I'll tell you, it just encompassed me. I mean, I was just lost in the music. As much as Bruce had me in his power, and during that concert, I mean, if you haven't seen Bruce in concert, you need to. It is incredible. Unfortunately, if you see Bruce in concert today, you will not be affected by the man who totally stole the show and blew me away, and that was Clarence Clemons. Oh, I still think about it. It gives me goosebumps to think about it. But like I said, I was new to the boss, and I proved that when I became angry with the crowd who I thought was booing him. Boo, boo. And one of my friends settled me down with her hysterical laughter at my dumb mistake, and she advised me that they were all yelling, "Bruce, Bruce." And of course, when I realized that, I began to chime in. But see, Springsteen to me was always a superstar. He was always a superstar. That's where he started. He must have been born a superstar. His career beginnings, though, were really as humble as his upbringing. He's made a lot of speeches over the years. He's been interviewed many, many, many times. And in his own words, through those things, he has talked about who Bruce Springsteen is, where he came from, what family and marriage mean to him, what he had to overcome in the cutthroat business he'd entered, the discord between Bruce and his father. He talks about Clarence and Stevie and the rest of the band. So I have a guest who's joining us, and he has a book, and I've got it in my hot little hand, and I'm so excited. I actually will admit to you that I just kissed the cover of the book because I figured that's as close as I'll ever come to Bruce Springsteen. The book is called Springsteen on Springsteen: Interviews, Speeches, and Encounters. It's edited by Jeff Berger, and he joins us right now. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you. And I should tell people a little bit about you. You're the author of published articles in more than 75 magazines and newspapers. They include Barron's, Family Circle, Gentleman's Quarterly, Golf Week, High Fidelity, the LA Times, Reader's Digest, and a whole lot more. And you've edited several major professional and financial magazines. And you live in Ridgewood, New Jersey. So maybe
that's why you know Bruce.
Yeah. Okay, so I love the book, first of all, and I love how much you know about Bruce Springsteen. You did this compilation of interviews, but you yourself interviewed him early in his career. Why don't you tell us about that and the impression you had of him at the time?
Yeah, it was very early on. You said something in your introduction about him being born a superstar.
Yeah.
It was anything but, actually. He grew up in a lower middle class family and was quite poor and was struggling for many, many years before he made it. His first album came out, and then his second album, and right after his second album came out, when he was still really quite unknown, I got it in the mail. I was reviewing albums at the time, and I put it on my record player. We had record players then, and couldn't take it off, and called Columbia Records and asked to interview him, and it was set up very quickly. They were looking for all the publicity they could get. And
try to do that today.
Yeah, right. And he literally spent half the interview complaining about how he couldn't pay his bills. he was earning, according to various, he told me, I think, $75 a week. I've read elsewhere that he was earning $35 a week. But in any case, he was poor. He wasn't concerned about himself so much. He was determined that even if he didn't make it, he was going to keep doing what he'd been doing. But he was concerned about being able to pay the members of his band and just keep the whole thing going. And in the course of the interview, I mentioned that I loved his second album but hadn't heard the first one yet. And he said, "I'll send you my copy. I can't afford a record player to play it on." and I said, "Keep it. You're going to be able to." I knew he was going to become successful.
Yeah.
And I thought he was joking, but in the course of putting this book together, I read another interview where he told someone else that he couldn't afford a record player. So I guess that was for real.
At the time, weren't there a lot of people who were comparing him to Dylan, and they were concerned that, you know, who needs another Dylan when you've got the original, he'll never make it, that sort of thing?
That's right. He was one of a whole group of new Dylans, also Loudon Wainwright, also Elliot Murphy, who wrote the a piece for the beginning of my book, a preface to my book, or foreword to my book, excuse me. And a whole bunch of them were being called the new Dylan, and Springsteen points out in the book that that was kind of ridiculous, that the old Dylan was still under 30 years old. So he agreed we didn't need a new Dylan. And he really was he was being sold as a folk singer on his first album, but as you know, he didn't really turn out to be a folk singer at heart, although he's come back to folk music at several points in his career.
You know, I never thought of him as anything close to Dylan, and I love Dylan. As a matter of fact, I saw Dylan not so long ago, and it was not pretty. But he's changed a lot over the years. And I love Dylan, but I never thought of Bruce Springsteen as anything like Dylan. Listen, let me ask...
When artists are new, reviewers and audiences need reference points, and they latch on to something. But a truly original artist like Springsteen, he's Springsteen. He's not anybody else.
He is Springsteen. There are people who are imitating him, but I don't think he was imitating anybody. So why do we call Bruce Springsteen the boss?
Oh, that's a name that got – there are a lot of stories about it, and one or two of them are in the book. He says that members of his band just started calling him the boss, not that he was the greatest, but just, hey, boss, where's my paycheck? and he never liked it. But it stuck, and I think there was a suggestion at one point that we put the boss in the subtitle of the book, and I didn't want to do that because I knew Springsteen wasn't particularly fond of it.
Well, that was very considerate of you. By the way, do you know, has he read the book?
It's gotten to him. I suspect he's read it. I mean, his attorneys gave me permission to use his speeches and so on, and they've got copies of the book, so. I assume it's gotten to him.
Well, you know, that I want to ask you a lot of questions about him and his upbringing and the things that you learned through these interviews. But let me just ask you about your impression of Bruce, because, I mean, he is so well-loved. Nobody mm-hmm. doesn't like Bruce Springsteen. John Stewart was fawning over him. He could hardly speak. He was so happy to be in the presence of Bruce Springsteen. What is it about him that makes us feel like that about him? Like, it seems like he's got to be the nicest guy in the world, and he understands grit, and he's soulful, and he's wonderful, and he has no flaws. That's what it feels
like. Yeah, you're right. Even New Jersey's governor, who Springsteen for years wouldn't even talk to, and because they're so opposite politically, New Jersey's governor loved him. Chris Christie loved him anyway and went to all his concerts. You know, there's an authenticity about him. A lot of rock artists are primarily moved, I think, by success and by making money. And Springsteen wanted his music to be heard, but I think he's managed to stay true to his ideals, and he stands for something, and I think people relate to that.
You know, there was something I was just reading in the book, and I think it was a Rolling Stone interview where they were talking about Elvis, and Bruce was saying it's the music. You know, it's not the man, it's the music. He's sort of the catalyst for the music. And maybe he really took that to heart about himself, too, so it didn't all go to his head. Hang on with me. I've got to take a break here, Jeff. So hang on with me. We'll come back and we'll talk more about it. The book is wonderful. It's called Springsteen on Springsteen, Interviews, Speeches, and Encounters. It's edited by Jeff Berger. And if you'd like to join us, the telephone number is 808-0810. I'm Pat Thurston. You're listening to KGO.
The all-new KGO 810. Hi, Ray Byers Jr.
Ray Byers Sr.
As a family-owned business, Byers Leaf Guard Gutters have been serving Northern California for three generations.
And we love the Bay Area.
With our patented design, water rolls into the gutters, leaves, sticks, and debris just roll right off.
And it's always guaranteed 100%. No leaks, no clogs, ever.
And that's what we call the Byers Guarantee.
If it ever did clog, my son Ray here will come out and clean it for free.
I thought that was your job.
No, I'm too old and handsome.
That's Byers.
Serving the greater Bay Area. Find us now at buyersleafguard.com.
At Shane Company, it's easy to pick out a unique Mother's Day gift that'll really surprise Mom, because we have hundreds of jewelry styles no one else has. If her tastes run traditional, she'll love our classic pearl jewelry with cultured freshwater pearls, Akoya pearls, South Sea or Tahitian pearls. If mom is into the latest fashions, check out our huge collection of sterling silver jewelry created by the hottest designers in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. If mom loves wearing colors, our natural rubies and natural sapphires can be set in a pendant or ring of your choice to make a one-of-a-kind piece. Let Shane Company's non-commissioned personal shoppers help you select a unique gift that mom will wear and treasure forever.
Now you have a friend in the diamond business, Shane Company, in Cupertino, San Mateo, and Walnut Creek. Open weekdays till 8, Saturday and Sunday till 5, online at ShaneCo.com.
Re-energize your commute at Boardwalk Chevrolet in Redwood City. Now, save gas, save money, go green in a new hybrid Chevy Volt from Boardwalk Chevrolet. Choose from over 40 Volts in stock, now from a shockingly low $259 a month, plus tax to lease for 36 months. A 2013 Chevy Volt, just $259 a month, with $2,500 due at signing. Includes first month payments, zero security deposit, plus tax, title, and fees. Plus, you get an additional $1,500 California Clean Vehicle Rebate. With a Volt from Boardwalk Chevrolet, you get an HOV lane sticker so your commute's a breeze. And many Silicon Valley employers have special convenient parking spaces for hybrids. So see the number 6 Volt dealer in the entire U.S., Boardwalk Chevrolet, off 101 and Whipple in Redwood City, or online at GoBoardwalk.com. Closed and lease based on 10,000 miles per year, 25 cents each additional mile on approved credit to highly qualified customers. 5 at this payment. Chevrolet. Find new roads at GoBoardWalk.com.
Mom, I had the best dream.
Well, good morning to you, too.
Okay, so I was a knight. I had a sword, and our house was a castle. There was this angry dragon. It was kind of scary.
Oh, yeah?
But I protected the castle.
Oh, that's my brave little man. I'm glad our castle is safe.
Your home is your castle, and sometimes you need help defending it. The National Association of Realtors supports maintaining homeowner tax incentives because they make home ownership more affordable for more families. Learn more at HouseLogic.com.
Get your news as it happens. Twitter, Facebook, ABC7, and instantly on the Bay Area's news station, KGO 810.
I had skin like leather and the diamond hard look of a cobra. I was born blowing weather, but I burst just like a supernova. I could walk like Brando right into the sun, dance just like a Casanova. With my black jack and jacket and hair slick sweet, silver star studs on my duds like a Harley in heat. When I strut down the street, I could feel its heartbeat. Sisters fell back, said, don't that man look pretty? The cripple on the corner cried out, nickels for your pity. Them gasoline boys downtown sure talk gritty. It's so hard to be a saint in the city.
Good evening, I'm Pat Thurston. My guest is Jeff Berger. His book is absolutely wonderful. It's Springsteen on Springsteen, Interviews, Speeches, and Encounters. And it's a compilation. It's all these interviews and their speeches that have been transcribed. And I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. And it really does give you insights into the man, into Bruce Springsteen. Jeff, I'm so glad you wrote this book. Why did you decide to do this? I mean, there have been a number of books that have been written about Bruce Springsteen. Why did you want Springsteen in his own words?
Well, it wasn't totally my idea. First of all, there are no books quite like this. There's nothing that focuses on his own words. But there is a series of books that Chicago Review Press, my publisher, is doing. They've got books on John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Tom Waits, Jimi Hendrix. And I was a contributor to the book on Tom Waits called Tom Waits on Tom Waits. And in the course of communicating with the publisher about my contribution to that book, I just kind of offhandedly said, hey, would you ever be interested in a similar book on Bruce Springsteen? Mm. And they said, absolutely, send us a proposal. Next thing I knew, I had a deadline in advance, and I was getting to work.
Yeah.
I
imagine so. You learned an awful lot about Bruce Springsteen in the course of this. And, you know, in the last segment, you mentioned the word authenticity in reference to mm-hmm. Bruce. But, you know, we think about him as a blue-collar guy. He looked like a blue-collar guy. He wrote music about blue-collar guys. He came from a blue-collar family, but he really wasn't a blue-collar guy ever, was he?
Yeah, if by blue collar you mean like lower middle class?
No, I mean like a working stiff.
No. He had I think he had one or two odd jobs for very brief periods of time. He was pretty much always doing music, but he was from the blue collar world. You know, his father had a series of jobs. His mother was also lower middle class, and they were struggling the whole time he was growing up.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's not struggling anymore.
Well, what was his relationship with his family? I mean, it seems like he had to be close to his family, very influenced by his family, but he had problems with his dad, didn't he?
He had big problems with his dad, and he talks about them a lot in the book. If you're interested in that, I would point you first to his interview with Charlie Rose, where he talks quite a lot about his parents and also about parenting. He had a very different relationship with his mother and his father. With his father, it was a difficult relationship with a lot of friction. His father did not appreciate his music and wanted him to go out and get a job, what he thought of as a job. His father was not a happy person. He was in and out of work. My image of him from Springsteen's interviews throughout the book is of a man sitting in the dark in the kitchen with a beer late at night and brooding. Mm-hmm. And Springsteen wrote a lot of songs about that relationship. He really only wrote one song about his mother, called The Wish, which is a very happy song about how his mother believed in him and bought him his first guitar with some borrowed money because she knew that was what he needed. And his mother gave him a very different picture of work. His mother had a joy in work and was proud to go off to work and proud of being a productive person in society. And that was a big influence on him, too.
And when he, there's a story about his dad when he received, I believe it was an Oscar for Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, his father said, "I'll never tell anybody what to do with their lives again."
there's also, and I'd like to just share this. This is in the book. This is part of Bruce's acceptance speech into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And this was March 15, 1999 in New York. And he thanks his mother. "I'd like to thank my mother, Adele, for that slushy Christmas Eve, a night like the one outside when we stood outside the music store and I pointed to that Sunburst guitar. And she had that $60. And I said, 'I need that one, Ma.' She got me what I needed, and she protected me and provided for me on 1,000 other days and nights. As importantly, she gave me a sense of work as something that was joyous and that filled you with pride and self-regard and that committed you to your world. Thanks, Mom." She was there.
Yeah.
"This is yours tonight. Take it home as a small return on the investment you made in your son." Now, my dad, he passed away this year, but I've got to thank him because what would I conceivably have written about without him? I mean, you can imagine that if everything had gone great between us, we would have had disaster. I would have just written happy songs. And I tried it in the early 90s and it didn't work. The public didn't like it. He never said much about my music, except that his favorite songs were the ones about him. And that was enough, you know. And, it,
yeah.
You know, it goes on. But, I mean, it's...
They did reconcile some before his father died.
Because he became so successful?
Well, I think his, you know, his father, something about aging made his father mellow. And then, yes, because he became so successful, his father realized that he'd been on the right path and that he'd been wrong.
Did Bruce do anything to, I mean, I would think that he did. His parents, you know, struggled financially all of their lives. Did he, you know, bring them out of that? Did he give them money? And would that have made his father feel better and more secure and happier, or would he have resented that?
I don't know the answer to that question. I did not. I assume that he helped his parents financially.
Yeah.
But I don't, there's nothing about that in the book, and I've never seen him address it anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet he must have. About the band itself, it wasn't always the E Street Band with Stevie Van Zandt and Clarence, was it?
No. I mean, they both came into the picture very, very early on. But Springsteen had a few other bands, and there were assorted aggregations going on in New Jersey in the very early days, and Springsteen performed solo as well. You see all this in the book. I think the interesting thing about the book is the chronological format, because just as he's reinvented himself musically a number of times, there are reinventions in the way he thinks in interviews, and he's saying things early in the book that are totally opposite to what he says later.
Isn't that funny? We all evolve.
Yeah. Well, he certainly evolved. I mean, he said he wouldn't play anywhere over 3,000 seats, and even that's too big. Now he plays 82,000 seats. He said, I couldn't bring up kids, and I just don't see why people get married. It's not for me.
Nah.
I could go on and on.
Has he been married twice? Yeah. He married the movie star, the pretty girl, and he
and that was a short marriage.
7 months, I think.
Well, a couple of years. Yeah, but I think it was not good from early on. And then he's been married for a long, long time to Patty.
That's such a remarkable thing. You know, that he's been married to her for so long, and that they have similar roots, and you know, that they do the music together. That's remarkable, and a real testament to their relationship. What are his thoughts on marriage? I know he's a supporter of marriage equality.
He absolutely is, and one of my favorite interviews in the book, along with the Charlie Rose one, is one with Judy Weider of the
Advocate.
She was the editor of the gay magazine, The Advocate, and so they talk about gay marriage, and he's very honest about that and very articulate on the subject, and he talks about his own marriage, and he talks about why marriage is important as opposed to just some kind of civil union or alternatives that have been offered for gay people. He said that he and Patty got to a point where it was important to them to declare publicly what their relationship was to their friends and family and stand up and take vows. And it's a very big concept to him.
Yeah. Like you said, a concept that also had evolved. Clarence Clemens. How close was Bruce to Clarence, and how heartbreaking was it to lose him?
Oh, extremely close. And I don't know whether you made it to the end of the book yet, but right near the end is Springsteen's eulogy to Clarence at his funeral. And that was kind of surprising, because when you read that, certainly their closeness comes through. He was like a brother to him, and he was the one really indispensable person in the band, I think, even counting Steve Van Zandt. Clarence and Springsteen were so close. But the surprise in that eulogy was there were hints that Clarence was not always the easiest guy to get along with. He was, he just looks like a god up on stage, but he could be difficult. In typical Springsteen fashion, even at the eulogy, he was honest about that. Not in great detail, but it comes through between the lines.
Well, that's okay, because it humanizes people. Because some people, and I met Clarence Clemens once. It was very brief, and it wasn't any big deal. But you know, I was able to say hello to him and tell him, you know, how, and swoon over him a little bit. But this was when he was working on the television show with Don Johnson here in San Francisco. What the heck's the name of that show? It's a cop show. Nash Bridges. Yeah, Miami Vice was in Miami, and Nash Bridges was here. Yeah. See, in New Jersey, you guys think we're the same. I know, but it's different. And I wondered, and I've got to take a break here, but I did wonder, did Bruce ever talk about the television careers that Clarence pursued and Stevie Van Zandt did, too? He was on The Sopranos. Did he ever feel like that was something that discredited the music, or somehow got them, they weren't as committed to the music or anything like that?
Don't answer that yet.
We'll talk about it when we come back. Let's do a little news break here. We're going to check in again with Sherry Brown. She's in the KGO Radio News Center, and she's not either. Kim McAllister's there.
No.
This is not my day, Kimmy.
I will have you know that I got stuck in the same festival you did.
Oh, you should have called me. I would have told you how to get here. Of course, it'll take you 25 minutes.
In case anybody's out there driving around the south of Market, this is at 2nd and Howard, and they're around. It's the How Weird Festival.
And there's a billion How Weird people.
And every street is blocked
off. Street.
Oh,
and then try to get around it, because San Francisco makes no sense. And as soon as you know that you've got to turn left, you're on a street where there are no left turns for miles.
This is extremely
true. So then you try to do the rights and go around doing rights, and then all of a sudden it goes to an angle. illegal or it just stops, and it's just awful.
So
San
if you're
Francisco.
Behind the wheel out there, just know Pat and I went through it too. You can make your way. It'll be all right. It's an update from the KGO 810 newsroom. While starting today, federal unemployment benefits will be cut by 18% because of sequester spending measures. Nearly 400,000 unemployed California workers will be affected as these cuts automatically kick in to reduce the deficit. One of the architects of failed gun control legislation says he will try again. Senator Joe Manchin telling Fox News he'll reintroduce a measure that would require criminal and mental health background checks for gun buyers at shows and online. Manchin says if lawmakers read the bill, they'll support it. He says his last bill failed because of confusion over what was actually in it. The chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee says the FBI is trying to find out if the Boston Marathon bombing suspects received training. Representative Michael McCall tells Fox News the shrapnel-packed pressure cooker bombs they allegedly used leads him to believe someone did train them. He also says he thinks the suspect's mother played a very strong role in her son's radicalization process. Meanwhile, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee says there are still persons of interest to be interviewed in the Boston Marathon bombings. Representative Mike Rogers of Michigan appearing on Sunday, today, on ABC's This Week.
Cultural problem there between where the Russians are and our folks. So they sent a letter, didn't have a lot of information. And then three extra times after the investigation was closed, they said, hey, do you have any more? They wouldn't do it. I believe that they have information and had more information.
Authorities are conducting a door-to-door sweep of homes scattered across hilly terrain in Calaveras County. They're checking storage sheds and horse stables for the killer of a little girl. Residents are being told to keep their doors locked and report anyone suspicious. The 8-year-old girl was found stabbed in her Valley Springs home yesterday. We'll check your sports, your first traffic and weather on the fives. That's at 5:35.
Bay to Breakers, presented by Craigslist, a San Francisco original, returns Sunday, May 19th for its 102nd running. Walk or run, it's all about fun, fitness, and creative expression. Enjoy live bands and dress in your most original and innovative costume as you join thousands of other racers. Don't miss out on this amazing San Francisco tradition on Sunday, May 19th. Register now at betabreakers.com.
You've thought about making a will or setting up a trust, and there's always something better to do. A well-organized living trust for your loved ones is one of the most important things you can do. Hopefully it's something you won't be needed for a long time, but if it is, they'll be grateful. Call the law offices of Kira Wattenberg King at 888-724-9910 for a free consultation. Kira can help you with all your estate planning needs, including wills and trusts, probate and conservatorships, trust amendments and administration, even special needs planning. She has offices throughout the Bay Area, and she's very good at explaining complicated estate planning in a manner that's easy to understand. I'm Dr. Bill Wattenberg, and yes, she's my daughter, but in her field, she's a lot smarter than I am. Don't delay anymore. Call Kira Wattenberg King at 888-724-9910. That's 888-724-9910 for Kira Wattenberg King.
Have you been dreaming of a new mattress? How about a new mattress and over 1,000 peaceful nights with no interest payments? Well, don't wait any longer. Sleep Train's interest-free for 3 event ends Sunday. Choose from Beautyrest Black, Stearns & Foster, Serta iComfort, and the Tempur-Pedic mattress sets and get 3 years interest-free financing on approved credit. That's no interest if paid in full within 36 months with just minimum payments required. Plus, for a short time, save up to $400 on a Tempur-Pedic Advanced Ergo Movable Base with virtually limitless numbers of ergonomic rest positions with just the push of a button. And when you buy a new mattress at Sleep Train, it's backed by their exclusive 100-day comfort guarantee. If you decide your new mattress is too hard or too soft, or you're just not satisfied with the comfort for any reason, simply exchange it or get your money back hassle-free. Start getting a great night's sleep tonight and pay no interest for 3 full years. For complete finance information and the store nearest you, call 1-800-378-BEDS. Sleep Train, your ticket to a better night's sleep.
Do you want fries with that?
No, thanks.
Sounds like you're in a new Honda Civic.
I am.
Is it awesome?
Pandora compatibility and rear view camera standard.
Nice.
And Hondas hold their value better than any other brand.
I want one so bad I can taste it. It's ketchup-y.
Are you eating my order?
Maybe.
Get a Honda Civic with 0.9% APR financing for well-qualified buyers during the Really Big Spring event. Now at your Honda dealer.
Pandora compatible with select smartphones. Wireless carriage rates apply. Value retention claim based on ALG's 2013 model year residual value award for mainstream brands. Visit ALG.com for more info. See dealer for financing details.
The KGO News Time is 5:35. We'll check your ride now with KGO's Paul Rogers.
Vacaville, westbound 80 at Cherry Glen. Lots of people returning from the Sierra. And now a crash. That's been moved to the shoulder, but it's backed up to Leisure Town Road. This report brought to you by Mike's Bikes. Westbound 80 jam from Golden Gate Fields to the Maze after some earlier problems. Minor backup at the Bay Bridge tolls, but it is sluggish in stretches from the metering lights all the way into San Francisco. The How Weird Street Fair going on in San Francisco. The intersection of Howard, or How Weird, as they're calling it, and 2nd Street is completely closed down. San Jose, northbound 880 at the 101 connector, crash on the shoulder. You're on the brakes from Guadalupe Parkway. The mega sale is on today at Mike's Bikes. It's the last day. Save big on the very best in bikes and gear. Every item is on mega sale right now. Shop mega sale bargains at mikesbikes.com, plus 11 locations in Northern California. Mega sale ends today at Mike's Bikes. I'm Paul Rogers, KGO 810.
KGO 810 Sports. The Warriors take on the Nuggets in Game 4 at Oracle this evening. In baseball today, Oakland beat Baltimore in 10 innings, 9-8. Padres over the Giants, 6-4. The KGO weather forecast clear tonight. Lows in the 40s and 50s, but warming right back up again for your Monday. We'll start the work week with highs in the low 90s inland, the mid-80s by the bay, and the mid-60s at the beach. Take a look at current temperatures right now. Vallejo, 82. It's 85 in Redwood City, 83 in Napa. In Half Moon Bay, 58, 68 in San Francisco on your Radio 810. I'm Kim McAllister, KGO 810.
Bay Area traffic sucks. Get there faster with traffic every 10 minutes on the 5s on the Bay Area's news station, KGO 810.
Good evening, I'm Pat Thurston. I'm speaking with Jeff Berger. Jeff is the author, he's actually the editor of the book, because it is called Springsteen on Springsteen, Interviews, Speeches, and Encounters. So, Bruce, through speaking at different venues and with different individuals, he's said an awful lot about himself. So this compilation gives you the opportunity to see what it is he has said about himself, about his music, about his life, about the people that he works with, about his family, about his upbringing, about everything. And we were talking, Jeff, and by the way, thanks again for being here. I'm just delighted to have you, and I'm delighted to have the book.
Again, thank you.
Let's talk about Clarence and Stevie, because I brought up their other careers, their television careers. I imagine being part of the E Street Band was the springing board to those careers. Did Bruce resent that, or was he supportive of them in that?
Oh, yeah, he was supportive. They weren't the only one. Max Weinberg was on.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Late Night. Yeah, and a lot of that really got started when Springsteen, quote unquote, fired the band when he wanted to go in other directions, and so it was actually more the other way around. The band was not so happy with him that he went in another direction, but he didn't. He understood that they wanted to build up their own careers, and I never heard a bad word from him about that.
Well, they didn't stay fired, did they?
No, they didn't. They didn't. I think Bruce came to his senses at some point. But I say that jokingly because I think the E Street Band is a better band than the band that he was working with in the interim. But I admire the fact that he tried new things all through his career, and that's part of what's made him great. You know, like the Beatles and Dylan, he kept reinventing himself.
Right. And, but you know, he didn't do the a lot of music videos. He did two, didn't he?
He did more than that. Actually, there's a compilation that fills two DVDs.
No kidding! Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
What am I thinking?
Yeah.
I guess I'm just remembering the one where he grabs the girl's hand in the audience and pulls her up on stage. What was that?
Yeah, that's Courtney Cox, who later became a famous actress. She was unknown at the time, and that was all staged.
Right.
I was Dancing in the Dark.
Right.
Yeah, but he was not particularly comfortable with videos early on, and he talks about that. And he never really totally warmed up to them. There's Nebraska that I don't think he appears in at all. you just have his music over, I mean, not Nebraska, excuse me, Atlantic City, where you just hear the music with scenes of Atlantic City in the background. But later on, he accepted them, at least, as a way to get the music to more people during the era when MTV was hot. And it's called The Complete Video Anthology. It's two DVDs.
Well, that's worth seeing. But now he, as I understand it, is because I think a lot of the celebrities, especially as big as Bruce, they don't like interviews. You know, they kind of shy away from it and they don't like to talk to people. But I think Bruce, he kind of liked it. He liked talking and being able to tell his own story.
To say. I mean, he was very he took it very seriously, and he did an interview when he had something to say. And he answered questions very thoughtfully and at length, at least in the later years. The very early part of the book, as I say in the introduction, is mostly articles that include quotes, a smattering of quotes. And later on, you get the Q&As, and that's no accident because he got a lot more articulate.
Yeah.
But he's always loved talking to people. There's a story that I quote in the preface where he was on a concert tour and he was in a theater one night just taking a break watching a movie, and some kid came up to him and started talking to him, and then the kid asked him to come over to his house and meet his parents, and he thought, well, what the hell, and he went over and met the parents and stayed a couple of hours, and they made him some food. That's not a typical celebrity thing to do.
No,
but he thought
not.
It was wonderful. He got to meet this whole family and get their whole life story, and he said he couldn't have done that if he weren't a successful rock artist. he enjoys people.
And that's, you know, he seems like it. He's always smiling at people. And he walks a lot, I guess, after he finishes a show. He goes home and he walks for a while because, you know, you've got that whole, you know, there's like a euphoria around you after you've been performing. And I always like those stories about how he would walk, and sometimes he would he'd stop and he would meet people and just sit and chat with people for a while. But now we talked earlier about how he didn't just catapult to stardom and riches.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, he had some frustrations in his music career. Wasn't he involved in a lawsuit against his manager?
Yeah, Mike Appel, and he was not able to record for quite a while. This was between the second album and Born to Run, and he talks about that in the book too. There's a lot of frustration that, you know, he was not in control of his career, and his initial contract with Mike Appel was not a very advantageous one to him. But he's, by the time you get to the induction to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he thanks Mike Appel for what he did for him and has him in the audience. He didn't hold a grudge. Appel was a very aggressive advocate of Springsteen, but also looking out for himself.
Yeah. So in the early days, other people were making money, but Bruce was broke.
Yeah, it's a fair assumption. He was not making a lot of money until Born to Run.
And then after Born to Run, is that when he really did become the superstar?
Yeah, there were really two leaps. There was in the summer of 1975, he had kind of a triple hit where Born to Run came out and was a huge success. And at about the same time, he did several nights at the Bottom Line Club in New York, where practically every influential critic in the country was in the audience. And that helped. And then also at the same time, he was on the covers of Time and Newsweek in the same week. And so all that brought him way, way above where he'd been 6 months earlier. And then years later, 1984, Born in the USA came out, and then he just, you know, rose to the stratosphere.
I wonder if he sent his dad copies of all of those things.
Excuse me?
It seems like, you know, he always wanted to impress his dad with what he was doing, that he was okay. I wonder if he sent him copies of Time and Newsweek and, you know, let him know all the successes that he'd had.
Oh, I think his dad knew, at least through his mother.
Yeah, she was probably bragging about him the whole time. Okay, Jeff, I've got to take one more break here, and then we'll wrap it up. But if any of our listeners want to chime in or ask questions or give Bruce stories, I'd love to hear them. Springsteen on Springsteen, interviews, speeches, and encounters, edited by Jeff Berger, and Jeff is my guest during this hour. You can join us at 808-0810. I'm Pat Thurston. This is KGO.
This is KGO 810.
Hey, what's happening? I'm Right Brand Bacon, the bigger, better bacon. When you bite into Right Brand Bacon, it's like DJ Bacon dropping a beat in a packed bacon disco in your mouth. I'm so meaty and delicious, I'm like meat candy. When you fry me up, I smell so good, it draws a crowd like free money. I'm so tender.
Right
so
Brand delicious. Bacon, bigger, better bacon. Find out more at biggerbetterbacon.com.
Attention men, if you're urinating more often, or waking at night to urinate, we want to send you a free bottle of Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate is our best-selling supplement, made with a natural ingredient that supports healthy urine flow and more complete bladder emptying. It's also been shown to reduce waking at night from the urge to urinate. To find out how to get your free bottle, just call 800-467-5160. Since Beta Prostate debuted, our warehouse has shipped over 2 million bottles. But there are still men who have yet to discover this amazing supplement. That's why for a limited time, you can try a full 30-day supply of Beta Prostate free. You only pay shipping and handling. This free Beta Prostate giveaway is only available while supplies last. And once it's gone, it's gone. Just call 800-467-5160. That's 800-467-5160. Call 800-467-5160.
Have you heard? Proactive is America's number one acne system because it's fast and gentle, and it's all about prevention. So, stay tuned for a chance to participate in a 60-day trial to prove it. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? With Proactive, you can heal your acne and help prevent new breakouts. Right now, in this radio area, we're looking for just 50 people with moderate acne to demonstrate exactly how fast Proactive works. The first 50 callers who qualify can try Proactive 100% risk-free for 60 days. And we're giving away our amazing Dark Spot Corrector, free and yours to keep, just for participating. With Dark Spot Corrector, it's like your breakouts were never even there. Be one of the 50 people to complete the 100% risk-free trial and get a free Dark Spot Corrector. Supplies are limited, and this offer ends soon, so call now. 1-800-669-5252. That's 1-800-669-5252. 1-800-669-5252.
Boom, boom, pow! Learn to jab, cross, and weave with classes at B Street Boxing. Nab 87% off at SweetJack.com.
Sweet Jack, now that's a real sweet deal.
SweetJack.com.
Pat Thurston here for the Ovation Cell Therapy System. May is just around the corner, and with May comes Mother's Day. This year, let your significant other know what you'd really like for Mother's Day is fabulous hair, revitalized hair, healthier hair, hair that is thicker, stronger, and longer. And you can get it with Ovation. I do use Ovation, and it's done wonders for my hair. When you find something that you really love, you want to share with others. You want to give it as a gift. Ovation is perfect for all hair types and all ages, and of course, it's for men and for women. There's no one who wouldn't love a gift of Ovation. But on Mother's Day, make sure you get the mom in your life what she'd love to have, Ovation. It's easy. Go to OvationHair.com. At checkout, select KGO to receive a special introductory discount. That's OvationHair.com, and choose KGO for your special introductory discount. Order now. Ovation at OvationHair.com.
Market news and financial updates every half hour at 28 and 58 on the Bay Area's news station, KGO 810.
Good evening. I'm Pat Thurston. My guest is Jeff Berger. Jeff is the author of Springsteen on Springsteen, interviews, speeches, and encounters. And you've got to get this. We'll put this, by the way, on the KGO Radio website, kgoradio.com, so that you can easily find the name of the book. You can find Jeff's name and make it easy for you to purchase the book, because you're going to want to do that. You are not going to be disappointed. Okay, Jeff. one thing that I wasn't thinking, but it just came to my mind. When we heard that song, War, in the recorded version of this, this is live, one of the things that he seems to have done a lot of is before some of his songs, you know, during a concert, he'd just start talking. He'd tell you stories. And that's what he was doing just before that started, what I just played. He's just talking to the audience. Now, is this something that he planned ahead of time, or is this just something that happens naturally with him?
You mean, are they rehearsed?
Yeah. Are they just ad-lib things that he's just, you know, I'm here and, oh, this is what I'm thinking? Or are they rehearsed? Are they scripted?
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're as tightly done as to use the word. I wouldn't use the word scripted, but he tells the same stories more than once, and he tells certain stories before certain songs. He's always liked to shake up his concerts a bit. He doesn't play the same songs in the same order or tell the same stories every night, but he has stories that work with certain songs in certain ways, and he's very theatrical about it.
He's his background, his heritage is Irish and Jewish. Is that right?
No, I don't think there's any Jewish. I think it's Irish, Italian, maybe something else in there. Not Jewish.
Ah, okay. And does that heritage mean a lot to him?
He doesn't really talk about that so much. His roots are really in his hometown, in New Jersey,
with his immediate family.
Not really the ethnic heritage.
You know, people in Jersey seem to think they own Bruce Springsteen. I don't know of anybody from Jersey who's ever said a bad word about Springsteen. Then again, I don't think I've ever met anybody who said a bad word about him.
Yeah, he's really, there are a bunch of other places that feel like they own Springsteen, too. He's got some very strong markets, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Phoenix. There are a number of places where he's really, really popular.
There's a story early in the book that talks about security, and I guess he's in the South, but he does talk about security and these kids and how he sort of is saving these kids from. He's not really talking about this. This is somebody else who's writing an article. But Bruce is sort of rescuing these kids from security guards at these concerts.
I remember that incident.
Was this something that was, you know, common that he was concerned about security being too tough on people?
Common with other artists, I don't think it is, but I think he feels a particular responsibility to his audience, not only to protect them from a stampede at a concert or from anybody getting hurt,
right?
But I think he also feels a responsibility to deliver a great show to them for their money.
And these kids sometimes get carried away. And Bruce has actually been known to send people out to, like, rescue them from security. Or he's even jumped off stage and grabbed one kid away from security who was trying to take him out and sat him down on stage to watch him play.
That's right.
That had to have been a memorable experience in that kid's life, something he would never forget as long as he lives.
Absolutely.
So how political is Bruce in reality?
Well, I think he's always been pretty political, but he, for a long time, played his cards close to the vest, and he felt that he didn't want to take partisan political positions, that wasn't his role. He was a musician, and people would get where he came from through the music. But then he got to a certain point where he felt, you know, I built up this capital with my audience, and I'm going to spend some of it now. And so he stepped out and made political speeches in favor of John Kerry and Obama, and that's in the book. And also in the book are his reasons for doing it. I have the transcripts of those speeches, but I also have Ted Koppel asking him, who the hell is Bruce Springsteen to tell anybody how to think politically?
And how did Bruce respond?
I'll just whet your appetite with the first part of his answer, which was, that's my favorite question.
Yay, I love that. I love the beginning of that answer, but we'll go back and we'll have to read the rest of, because the Ted Koppel interview, I think, is probably one of the more notable. And Charlie Rose, too. I think that was a great interview with Charlie Rose in the book as well. Yeah,
absolutely.
You mentioned earlier Tom Waits, and I'm running out of time here, but how did the experience compare between the work that you were doing with Tom Waits and what you had to do to put this book together on Bruce Springsteen?
Oh, well, the Tom Waits one, I was just a contributor. The editor of that book contacted me because he found an interview that I'd done with Tom Waits back in 1975 or four for Melody Maker, and wanted to include it in his book. This time, of course, I put the whole thing together. And I might mention that I've just done another one after Springsteen. I did Leonard Cohen on Leonard Cohen, which will be out next spring.
And was that as much work as the Springsteen book?
Maybe even more. That's going to be a fatter book and contains more than 50 interviews spanning nearly half a century from 1966 to 2012. And that book, approximately 25% of the material hasn't been previously printed anywhere.
Oh, no kidding.
And there's lots of interesting material in that. There's a foreword by Suzanne Vega. I'm excited about that one.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When that book comes out, I'd love to have you back on and we can talk about that. Tell me, was there anything that stood out to you, anything that really surprised you as you put this together, that Springsteen on Springsteen?
Well, I think just he's been big so long that it's easy to forget, even for someone who interviewed him early on, just how much he struggled in the early days and how much he's changed. And to go back after, you know, to go back 40 years and hear him saying things like, you know, I'm not really a literary type of cat, and then, you know, and then later on you read these interviews where he's basically educated himself.
Yeah.
Without a college education, he did it on his own. You forget hearing him today how different he was early on.
Did he ever struggle with the substance abuse and those kinds of problems that so many artists struggled with through part of that era?
He never did. What I thought you were going to ask me was whether he ever struggled with depression and psychological problems, and he did, and he talks in the book about getting help for that. But possibly because of what he saw with people around him and with his father, with alcohol and so on, he liked to be in control, and he did not he didn't want to get involved in drugs or alcohol. I think there's one interview in the book where, you know, later on he did start drinking a little bit, but in this interview he pours himself a drink and 2 hours later it's still sitting there half full.
Isn't that something?
And he never took drugs at all.
For somebody to be that much in the limelight and in that industry during that period of time, that is truly notable, and especially considering the quality of music he was able to do it without mind altering.
Yeah, it's really exceptional. I was around a lot of other rock artists and those particularly in the 70s, and the drugs were everywhere. It is exceptional.
What a delight to talk with you, Jeff. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Now, you have a website, don't you, where people can keep track of where you're going to be and what you're working on?
Absolutely, I do. It's called buyjeffberger.com, and that's Berger is spelled B-U-R-G-E-R. So it's buyjeffberger.com.
Okay, buyjeffberger.com. And you know what? We'll put that on our website, too, and link it so that people can get there as easy as possible. The book is Springsteen on Springsteen. You can get it anywhere. You can get it from Amazon. You can get it from your local bookstores. And I assure you, you will not be disappointed. It's really a wonderful piece of work. And I thank you so much for joining us, Jeff.
Pat, thank you so much. You've been terrific.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's Jeff Berger again, Springsteen on Springsteen, interviews, speeches, and encounters. I know that I gush over things like this because I'm such a big fan of Bruce Springsteen. And forgive me that, but if you're a fan too, I'm sure that this is a book that you're going to want to pick up. We have another guest who's going to be with us in the next hour, and we're going to be talking about another issue. Now, this is a very serious issue, and this is an issue that we have spent a little bit of time on this station talking about. I know that we broached it on the Ron Owens program. I had Antonia Juhas on with us as we talked about the Keystone Pipeline. But coming back, I have someone who has now written a book, and it is very comprehensive. And I think any questions you have about Keystone XL and the controversies surrounding it, I think our guest is going to be able to answer. So won't you stay tuned for that? I'm Pat Thurston. You're listening to KGO, San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland.